I'm your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Thursday, June 10th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. My apologies for being off yesterday. As I said, still working out some of the kinks in my new schedule, but still trying to iron them out. So again, my apologies, but we'll get there. And hopefully I will catch up to speed here, maybe this weekend with a couple other podcasts I'll put out there. So the title of today's podcast is Central Banks Keep On Printing. So we have U.S. inflation rate hitting near 13-year highs for the month of May. The U.S. consumer price inflation rate jumped to 5% in May, the highest since August of 2008, and above market expectations of 4.7%. The reading came in also above the Fed's target of about 2%, which of course they are perfectly fine with, at least for the time being. And this is on the back of higher commodity prices, supply constraints, and higher wages, at least higher wages nominally speaking. Currently, now this could just be part of the base effects and just sort of because some of the industries that were hardest hit during the pandemic happened to impact those lower skill, lower wage. But now since the economy is quote unquote reopening and those jobs are coming back to life, well, when you start to look at average hourly earnings, it's actually down when you take into effect, take into consequence the inflation rate. So real average hourly earnings are actually down. So you have this, as some have been calling it, this K-shaped recovery, right? You have this big inflation driven bubble in asset prices, which of course will benefit, at least for the time being, those that hold those financial assets, whether that's real estate, whether that's stocks, bonds, etc. And then you have those at the lower end of the spectrum who are actually losing wages on a real basis. So this is a tale of two economies. This is the zombification of our economy, of the global economy, really. What is supposed to be creative destruction has now just turned into the zombification of our economy. This is stunting current growth. It is stunting future growth. It is criminal. But for whatever reason, businesses are not allowed to fail. They're not allowed to restructure. That is just simply not supposed to happen. Now, of course, if you're a small business, okay, that might be, of course, a different story as of what we've witnessed. But if you're, you know, a publicly traded company, you're of some size, some import to the system, oh no, they're going to keep you alive no matter what the price. And that's what we continue to witness. So we will dig deeper into the inflation report probably tomorrow or over this weekend. I want to focus today again on the initial jobless claims report, which is what we typically talk about on Thursdays, an update to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, and just a couple other stories, and we'll get through market performance right now. But before we get to that, we do have our president, our demented president, unfortunately, overseas in Europe representing us at the G7, where the G7 is going to be some sort of coordinated effort to implement some form of a global government. Okay, so all of the tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists, they are having their moment in the sun right now with the pandemic, with the vaccine, with Fauci, with Gates, with Epstein, and now a global government because they want global taxes. They want, obviously, some form of a Green New Deal. So this is what we're dealing with right now. There is no more national sovereignty. They're just going to make all this crap up as they go. Hopefully there is pushback. I think there will be. It's not going to be that easy to implement all of these things, but the very fact that they are openly discussing it is of concern to me as an American, and it should be a concern to you. And then, of course, his number two in command, the high, our Vice President Kamala Harris, well, she's not in Europe, as you've heard, and she hasn't been down to the border either, but that was her response to a question. You're in charge of this border crisis, which now the media, the mainstream media, is finally admitting to is a crisis, which of course it is. It's a travesty. It's a human rights problem. It's a terrible situation. But she's in charge of it. So don't you think if you have this massive problem, you should at least go down to the border where the problem is and talk to some of the boots on the ground to get a better idea of what's actually taking place? I mean, because if you're just going to make the excuse that, well, you can pick up the phone, you can send emails, you can have a teleconference, et cetera, then you don't have to go anywhere. Okay? So show some leadership, take the initiative, get down there, and act like a leader. Now, she can't do it because she isn't a leader. She can't even put on the appearance of it. And of course, in that interview with NBC News, she laughs like she does. That's why I call her the hyena, because she doesn't know what she's talking about. Oh, you haven't been to the border. Well, I haven't been to Europe either. Apparently, you haven't been to the insane asylum recently either, because they would have locked you up. This is who we have. This is the best, evidently, that we can do. Okay? This is a first world banana republic, and we are collapsing. Very evident. It's by the day. Market performance. Now, inflation at these rates, you would think maybe the markets would be concerned about this. Maybe they would think that the Fed is going to start to taper with these types of numbers. Oh, no, they couldn't care less. But, of course, we know the real reason why markets couldn't care less, and we'll get to that momentarily when we talk about the Fed's balance sheet. But nonetheless, we have the dollar index trading at 89.97, so flirting with that 90 handle, down about 0.1% in the overnight Forex trading hours. We have Bitcoin. You know, it's actually flat right now at $36,700 a coin, so still range-bound in the 30,000 to 40,000 range where we have been for quite a while. On the overnight futures, we have the U.S. exchanges all currently flat. But again, the day session, that did not stop the S&P 500 from making new all-time highs. Cash trade in Japan is currently in the red, down about 0.1%. Pretty much a sea of red across the pond in Europe. The British exchange being the exception, putting on a gain of about 0.1%. Cash trade in Australia in the green, up about 0.3%. Chinese stocks are currently in the red, down about 0.2%. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $69.85 a barrel, so very much still flirting with that 70 handle. Brent is at $72.04. Natural gas up 3 percentage points today, trading at $3.24. Gasoline, $2.20. Gold and silver, both in the green overnight. Gold is at $1,900 per ounce. Silver is at $28.10 per ounce. We'll get back to that momentarily here. Copper is at $4.50 a pound, and lumber is at $1,122 per 1,000 linear board feet. So on this commodity front, let me just back up. And we're going to talk about this in further detail tomorrow or over the weekend with the inflation report. But a lot of it was driven by auto sales. New cars, used cars, that had a big deal. And you have a lot of people who are not necessarily in the inflation camp who are pushing back and saying, okay, they're believing the BS and the spin from the Federal Reserve that this is all going to be transitory. And they're simply saying, okay, auto sales are going to peak, and then that is going to start having put downward pressure on these inflation figures. But they're completely ignoring commodities, food, and a whole host of other items and services that people need. And again, I want to stress the items, the goods, the services that people need. Not the crap that you don't need, the stuff that you do. That's the main focus, because that's where you're going to get that intersection of economics, politics, and social issues. That's where all of this is going to blow up, because it's going to be the thing. This is a decade of survival, believe me when I tell you, and we are in the very early innings of this long ballgame, all right? So that's what this is about, and they are not taking into consideration rising oil prices, which I think could go much higher from here, to say the very least, because I don't know, they're going to end up trapping themselves within one narrative after the next. And I'm talking about those who push back against inflation, think it's transitory. So even if you're going to make the argument that there's, because most of these people still argue that there is going to be some sort of recovery. Well, if that's the case, don't you think the demand would indicate that there's going to put upward pressure on energy prices? Don't you think that that would take place? Because you still have those supply constraints. You still have energy producers who have shut down and cut back on supply. It's not a light switch to get these rigs going again. It's very expensive. It's very time consuming. And they're not as efficient as they were before the shutdown. That's how it works. So none of this is taken into consideration. I think they're missing the point. I don't think the markets are pricing inappropriately a lot of the geopolitical risks that are out there. We have the Chinese instituting price controls. Are you kidding me? Price controls, you know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to create shortages because that's what happens when you institute price controls. Because when governments do it, they set the price below a market clearing price. All right? So if it's below where the market otherwise would have it, suppliers say no can do, and now you're going to have shortages. So this is just going to feed into the problem. This is reminiscent of the 1970s. We are going to be in a stagflationary environment, and people do not understand it. People do not understand that you can have high unemployment and high inflation. You most definitely can. They didn't think it could happen before. It did. It's happening now. All right, so continuing. And again, with inflation at these levels, with real interest rates going further into the red, this should be a boon for precious metals. And I believe it will be. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.44%. So we have been range-bound for the past few months. We have now broken through that range to the downside. So higher bond prices, lower yields. Yields have gone down, so there was a bid for Uncle Sam's debt on the long end of the curve here, all right? So clearly, the bond market is not concerned about this inflation. Well, they should be. I think the bond market is wrong here, but we know the bond market is greatly distorted, just like pretty much every other market out there, because of central bank policy. So you do not park your cash in treasuries if you think it's an inflationary environment, because the inflation just eats into it. But, hey, the bond market said, hey, now look, this is the knee-jerk reaction. We'll see what happens tomorrow. We'll see what happens next week. But nonetheless, the knee-jerk reaction was this quote-unquote flight to safety into the bond market, pushing yields lower. Now, this, of course, brings us back to the narrative of the Federal Reserve, because they were telling us a few months ago when yields were rising that that was a good thing. That was indicative of a growing economy. That was indicative of an economy that is well on its way to a solid and sound recovery. Other central banks were concerned about this, but not the Federal Reserve. They said, no, no, don't worry about it. It's a good thing. So we said, all right, well, wouldn't logic tell us then if yields go back down, wouldn't that mean that there isn't an economic recovery? Wouldn't that mean that maybe we're going back into recession? Or there's some sort of weakness occurring? So I hope that question is brought up next week, because the Federal Reserve will have their FOMC meeting. Jay Powell, the chair of the Fed, will have his Q&A session with reporters. Hopefully they continue like they did last time, pushing him a little bit harder than they have over the past year and a half, and finally start to continue to ask some serious questions. Now, he's not going to be able to answer them, but the very fact that they are starting to ask some tougher questions is very important. And for the markets and for the audience to view how the man, Jay Powell, cannot and does not answer these questions should be very telling. Okay, so we'll get to that, obviously, next week when that happens. So let's make our way here to the Department of Labor report for initial jobless claims. So for the week ending June 5th, seasonally adjusted, the claims come in at 376,000. 376,000 is the number. This is the lowest going back around the start of the pandemic. Okay, on a non-seasonally adjusted basis, the number comes in at 367,000. On a seasonally adjusted basis for continuing claims for the week ending May 29th, the number comes in at about 3.5 million. Now, that's a week-over-week decrease of about 258,000, but it is still somewhat high and concerning. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, continuing claims come in at 3.3 million. For the week ending June 5th, for the PUA program, or the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, again, one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act, that number comes in at 71,292. So in aggregate, we are still well below where we were during the depths of the Great Financial Crisis, which has sort of been the barometer that we have been monitoring here week after week, and we have been trending lower, which is a good thing. And in aggregate, for the week ending May 22nd, recall the aggregate number lags by a couple of weeks. This takes into consideration regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and work share gives us a grand total of 15.3 million Americans who continue to claim some form of unemployment insurance benefit. Again, the number 15.3 million. This gives us a de facto unemployment rate of about 10.9%. Okay, this is a week-over-week decrease of 95,000. The biggest decreases were seen in the PUA program, down 12,700. The PEUC program, down about 70,000. And extended benefits, down 16,000. So that number, 15.3 million, again, is still stubbornly high, but it is trending lower, which is what we want to see. But of course, a lot of these programs are simply expiring. So that's also something to keep in mind. We have been dealing with some very large distortionary effects in the jobs market since the pandemic, which is something that the Capital News has been warning and discussing since it took place. And we are still in the midst of a lot of distortionary policy, so we continue to get a very blurred picture of the overall jobs market. And this is going to continue for the foreseeable future. Okay, so that's the initial jobless claims report. And the prior week, there was no revision. There was no revision, so last week's number stands at 385,000. Now, don't spit out your Cheerios or anything, but a report from Axios here. Half of the pandemic's unemployment money may have been stolen. Half. Half. That's kind of a big deal, I would think, don't you? Criminals may have stolen as much as half of the unemployment benefits the U.S. has been pumping out over the past year, according to some experts. Unemployment fraud during the pandemic could easily reach $400 billion, according to some estimates, and the bulk of the money likely ended in the hands of foreign crime syndicates, making this not just theft, but a matter of national security. Good point. When the pandemic hit, states weren't prepared for the unprecedented wave of unemployment claims they were about to face. They all knew fraud was inevitable, but decided getting the money out to people who desperately needed it was more important than laboriously making sure all of them were genuine. Helping taxpayers, yet also screwing them over at the same time. Decisions, decisions, decisions. Again, 96-0, no votes for America. We were all over this before it happened. Representation and recourse. Check out the article on thecapitalnews.com. which seems to be gaining some traction as I check some of the stats on the website. So that's good that people are finding that article, Representation and Recourse, because it's timeless and it's proven that way. Okay? You cannot do this. This is just what's taking place right here. Half of this money being stolen, and it could be more than that, because this is just the unemployment benefits. So what about all of the PPP programs and all that other crap that's out there? But this is just example 1,000,022 as to why you do not embark on these types of policies. Just don't do it. So here, this is according to one of these experts. Blake Hall, CEO of ID.me, a service that tries to prevent this kind of fraud, tells Axios that America has lost more than $400 billion to fraudulent claims. As much as 50% of all unemployment monies might have been stolen. According to Haywood Talkove, the CEO of LexisNexis Risk Solutions, estimates that at least 70% of the money stolen by imposters ultimately left the country, much of it ending up in the hands of criminal syndicates in China, Nigeria, Russia, and elsewhere. Great, countries that just love us to death. And of course, I'm talking about China and Russia there. So it's not even as if it was stolen in the country, so at least the money might be circulating in this country, which wouldn't be good, but at least I guess it would be better than it being in the hands of the Chinese and the Russians circulating in China, in Russia. But hey, Nothing to see here. And they say, these experts continue to claim, that these groups in China, Nigeria, Russia, and elsewhere are definitely backed by their state governments. So that's good. Would that be an act of war or anything like that? Is that any type of concern? Is that one of those geopolitical risks that we have to keep in the back of our minds that the markets aren't pricing in? Much of the rest of the money was stolen by street gangs domestically, who have made up a greater share of the fraudsters in recent months. Quote, widespread fraud at the state level and pandemic unemployment insurance during the previous administration is one of the most serious challenges we inherited, end quote. This was said by White House economist Jean Sperling. Of course, blame it on the Trump administration. And of course, there's blame to be put on the Trump administration for this, but there's also blame to be put on the Biden administration. You've been there for 5 months. Get your act together. You know, it's always passing the buck. Again, no responsibility, no accountability, no leadership. So this is what we get. President Biden has been clear. This is another quote. That this type of activity from criminal syndicates is despicable and unacceptable. It is why we passed $2 billion for UI modernizations in the American Rescue Plan, instituted a Department of Justice anti-fraud task force, and in all of government identity theft and public benefits initiative. Oh, great. We spent another $2 billion. Let's see how much that actually gets us back. Scammers often steal personal information and use it to impersonate claimants. Other groups trick individuals into voluntarily handing over their personal information. The story continues. So this is a tragedy. We talked about this before several months ago, where several months into the pandemic, people who were filing claims on a weekly basis for several months by then still had yet to receive a single penny. Well, it appears that a lot of this money was simply stolen. So there you have it. This is exactly what happens. This is just one of the many reasons why I was against these types of bailouts. This is what happens. It happens all the time. And people were in desperate need because people can't afford to live in this country. But there's no inflation. There's no inflation. There has been inflation in this country for years. People just don't want to admit to it. People just can't connect the dots. If everything was so great under the Obama administration, we would have had a President Hillary Clinton, God help us. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The country said, screw it. Let's blow up the system. Let's vote in Donald Trump. Can't you connect the dots? People can't afford to live. They couldn't afford to live then. They can't afford to live now. We didn't have and don't have massive protests and riots around the globe because the cost of living is so damn affordable. That's not why they're protesting. That's not why there's revolutions and riots and military coups all over the place. It's because they can't afford to live. So it's insulting to me when I hear people say, oh, there's no inflation, or we don't have to worry about inflation. It's all going to be deflation at the end of the day. No. The inflation's already here, and it ain't going away. It's only going to get worse. And for a whole host of reasons. And we'll talk about more of that when we get into a deeper dive when it comes to those inflation figures in the report that came out earlier today. So, why was Mr. Market able to shrug off all of this news? Oh, that's because the Federal Reserve's balance sheet hit another all-time high. $7.952 trillion is now the number. $7.952 trillion. An increase over the prior week of about $17 billion. So, this is not correlation. This is causation. This is why the market continues to move higher. You want to know how it's causation? Take the money out. Stop doing it. And let's see what happens. Remove all of this funny money that they have thrown into the system. And let's see where Mr. Market is. I don't think it'll be anywhere close to the levels it's currently trading at. Much, much lower would be my argument. But you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to bring that up. I would love for one of these financial reporters to ask Mr. Powell that question next week. Show him a chart. of their own data, of their balance sheet. Chart it against the S&P 500 and say, explain this. Who do you really work for? Is this part of your mandate? Can we take you seriously? Again, who are you really working for here? These are simple questions. It's with data that they themselves produce. Hold their feet to the fire. That's their job. That's the job of the media. And again, I will give credit where credit is due. Last month, they finally started doing that. We'll see if they continue that this time around. I hope they do, and I hope they get nasty with the guy, Jay Powell, because he's no friend of the American people, believe me when I tell you. So $7.952 trillion. And the Fed remains committed to their quantitative easing policy, $120 billion per month at least, and they continue to purchase at least $40 billion per month of mortgage-backed securities, despite the fact that we continue to have higher and higher housing prices. They're just not stopping. And the remainder of that, so the $80 billion, they continue to pump into Uncle Sam's debt market. They're not stopping that either. And they had the audacity to tell us last week that they're going to begin tapering some of their corporate bond holdings, which they shouldn't have to begin with, but they have them. Okay. And they're going to taper off $14 billion because that's how much they hold. They shouldn't hold a penny, but they got $14 billion of them. And they said, well, we're going to start tapering, but it's going to be a long process. It's going to take us to the end of the year, maybe even longer than that. What a joke. Last week alone, their balance sheet increased by $32 billion to an all-time high last week. Now they've just jacked it up another $17 billion. And they're going to tell us they're going to taper $14 billion? They can't do it, folks. They are trapped. They are trapped. You can look at these other monetary measures. You could look at money in circulation, base money, charts going vertical once again. They went vertical last year because of the pandemic. They're going vertical again because they're desperate. Because the system is on the verge of collapse. It's all this is. This is all smoke and mirrors. This is as fake can be. But the crackheads on Wall Street love it. They absolutely love it. This is their monetary methadone, and it ain't going to stop until it does. When that day is going to be, I don't know, but it's going to be a nasty one. That's all I know. Because once the Fed and the ECB and these other central bankers lose control, it's game, set, match. And there ain't going to be a safe haven. There's just not going to be. And that's another reason why this decade is going to be all about survival. It's all there is to it. All there is to it. And the ECB, they came out today, Christine Lagarde, the president of the ECB, the European Central Bank, they remain committed to keeping their interest rates low for as long as it takes, and they remain committed to their quantitative easing program, and in fact, they're going to step up the pace of their purchases. And the Bank of Canada is also keeping their interest rates low for as long as it takes, although they did reduce some of their QE, but they still have their own QE policy in place as well. And I don't know if I mentioned this the other day or not, but it came across my Twitter feed that there was a house in Toronto, no bedrooms, that sold for $1 million. You heard me correctly. A home in Toronto, Canada, sold for $1 million. No bedrooms, no, I think it was like 632 square feet. You know, there's no problem, though, anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. There's no inflation. It's extremely affordable to live. You don't got to worry about a thing. So central banks keep printing because that's all they know how to do. As I stated, we will have a deeper analysis of those inflation figures. Last week, because it was the jobs report, I wanted to do a deeper dive into labor force participation and some other employment metrics, so that might take place tomorrow too, or we'll do something over the weekend. All right, so there you have it. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.